Morocco's hottest club is Rick's. Founded after an emo American boy got dumped in Paris, this place has everything. Roulette, men who are actually fives but wearing tuxedos, Nazis, corrupt cops, and Ingrid Bergman. This is Casablanca.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Seen and Heard.
Hey.
This is the podcast where two entertainment assistants run through the Sight and Sound Top 100 Greatest Films of All Time list. We are literally sprinting through. No, we're not. I'm Greg.
I'm Jackie.
And we're back this week for a Hollywood staple. This is just one of the, you know, I feel like you ask someone to name a classic movie that hasn't seen anything. This is one that they can actually like, oh, that's a movie, right?
The creme de la creme.
Is it?
I mean, well, we'll get to this.
We'll get to it.
Yeah, it's Casablanca, by the way.
Yeah, it's Casablanca. This is number 84 on the list. It's tied for 84 with a couple others. Michael Curtiz from 1942. But before we get into this week's film, what have you been watching this last week, Jackie?
I have been continuing my Isabelle Huppert binge.
I love to hear that.
L by Paul Verhoeven?
Uh-huh.
Is that how you say his name?
He's a god.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
No, but I'm obsessed with him.
Greg, why haven't you seen this?
I don't, honestly, it's from a few years ago, right?
2016.
Yeah, it just slipped through the cracks for me. I don't know.
You gotta see it.
I know, I'm mean to see it.
And it's so funny because I realized something really weird. Remember on the podcast a few weeks ago, I said I had watched another Isabelle movie, Things to Come by Mia Hansen-Love, also released in 2016, same as Elle. And it's so weird, but when I was watching this one, I'm like, oh, she's playing a woman that goes through like kind of the same things minus one major thing in L. Basically, it's very weird. Like in both movies, they came out in 2016, she becomes a grandma. Okay, she's divorced or separated from her husband, but like he plays a big part in the movie. Her mother, who she has a complicated relationship with, dies in both movies. Like, it was just like these weird similarities while I was watching it. And it just fascinated me that they're two such different movies, but like same actress going through similar things, same year. Anyway, I also watched Clouds of Sils Maria by Olivier Assayas. And it's really great. It's really, really great. It is, it reminds me of Opening Night a little bit, but it's much more chill. you'd like it. And it just continues his commentary like on the industry. It started with Irma Vep. I don't know. I haven't really seen anything. Like, I don't know if he did anything in between Irma Vep and this that also comments on the industry, but this one is very much like kind of about, not just about the industry, but I just love how he feels so free to talk about it in his movies. And I think it's really cool.
He did one about the porn industry called Demon Lover, I think. I haven't seen it though.
But like purely about like cinema and
Right.
What's happening and like audiences and superhero movies and things like that. And then I also watched one of your favorite spaghetti westerns, The Great Silence.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What do you think? I saw your 3.5 stars on Letterboxd.
That's good for me. I've told you this time and time again. That is good for me. It's not like amazing.
Right.
But good for me. I don't know, something about it, like, I don't want to say I was bored because I wasn't bored per se. I was just kind of like, okay, like, this is, yeah.
With the guy from Amour.
Good. Yes. Oh my God.
Just passed away.
Jean-Louis is his name?
Jean-Louis something.
Trignon?
Yeah, that sounds right.
No, he's amazing in it. And the ending is really, really... bleak.
Yes.
I didn't know, which was great. But yeah.
Klaus Kinski.
That's what I've been watching. Not only have we lost Jean-Louis Trignon this year, but just a few days ago.
Another Jean-Luc.
He's Jean-Louis.
Oh, sorry.
We did lose Jean-Luc Godard.
We did.
How do you feel?
I mean, he was like the last of the new wave legends.
And isn't it funny that he was like kind of the most, I don't want to say the most famous, but
kind of. I think he probably is, yeah. He had a great run, and I from what I understand, he ended his life intentionally. Yeah. He wasn't sick or anything. So it was like an assisted suicide, medically assisted. So, hey, look, he said he was tired or something and he just wanted to be done. And all respect there, you know?
I believe he's the director. We've said this. He's the director with the most movies on the list, right?
Oh, yeah. There's like four.
So him and Bergman both have four on the list.
Mm, the big hitters.
It's just, yeah, it's just so weird to think about that he was still here. Like, I think it's more unbelievable that he was still here, you know?
Yeah. It's always weird. It's always surreal losing a legend like that.
I know.
But yeah, he did outlive Truffaut by like 40 years. Wow. So that's, he had a good run. He had a good run.
He outlived everyone, I feel
he
like.
He did. Anna Karina passed away a couple years ago. Yeah.
Agnes Varda just a few years ago. 2019, I think.
Yeah.
What about you?
I saw a couple things. I saw, we both saw Xanadu.
Oh my God, I forgot about that one. Yeah.
We saw Xanadu at the New Beverly, which was great. First time on the big screen. Everyone was super into it. I saw Jaws in IMAX the other day, which I'm like, I hate seeing non-IMAX movies in IMAX because it's a ripoff. Yeah. Like, they literally just cropped the screen.
Yeah.
And I think because they just did E.T., like E.T. toured for 2 weeks and then Jaws toured for 2 weeks. And my friend really wanted to go, so I went. But it was like $30 for a ticket. And living in L.A., it's like, that is so, like, we get repertory stuff all the time. Yeah. And like, I could go see Jaws at the Academy Museum for $10. So it hurt to pay $30. Of course, there were like two other people in the theater.
Where was this?
It was at the City Walk AMC.
$30?
Yeah, because it's IMAX. It's IMAX price.
That's how much IMAX is now?
Yeah, and it was during the day. It was like a 4 p.m. show on a Monday.
Wow.
Yeah, but still, great movie. And I actually never seen it on the big screen before. That's why I went. If I'd already seen it on film somewhere, I would have been like, no, I'm going to pass. But I hadn't seen it on the big screen.
But you guys were the only ones there.
There was like two other people in this huge IMAX theater. I saw Model Shop at the New Beverly the other night, which was great. Went with some friends who hadn't seen it before. And I love that movie so much. It's just, my friend Jonathan, who was there, was like, I think this might be my new favorite LA movie. And I'm like, yeah, this is like one of the great LA movies.
Better than Xanadu.
It's the Jacques Demy. It's, I mean, no, they're both great LA movies. It's not my I don't have like a single favorite LA movie, but it belongs in the pantheon of great LA films. And then I saw for the first time the Safdie brothers' second film, which is called Daddy Long Legs, which is kind of autobiographical about them growing up with their dad and like divorced parents and stuff. And I think I figured because it was like 2009 and I was like, oh, it probably is just like a really minor film. And I was really blown away by it. It's just, it's so accomplished. Like it's no one, like those guys are so the real deal. Yeah. Like there are so few new filmmakers where you can be like, they're the real deal. Mm-hmm. The Safdies absolutely are. And what I liked about it too is the first film I saw of theirs was Good Time when it came out. And Good Time and Uncut Gems have a lot in common. And they're this kind of like neon soaked kind of like thrillers. And I liked that they brought that same energy to this film, Daddy Long Legs. But of course, it's just about a father, a single father, or, you know, a divorced father raising. Mm-hmm. It's basically about these 2 weeks that he has his kids. Mm-hmm. And he's not really in the best place to like be a father. And so it's kind of, it's kind of that. It's like part loving tribute and part like, you know, them resenting their father for the way that they were raised because some kind of crazy shit happens in the movie. But yeah, they're the real deal. What can I say? Like, there's so few filmmakers who really are, but they are. They're real movies. They're real movies.
And let's take a time machine. Let's go to 1942. Let's talk about Casablanca.
Let's do it. From 1942.
Yeah, I just said that.
This is Michael Curtiz's Casablanca.
Casablanca was released in 1942. It was directed by Michael Curtiz, written by Julius J. Epstein, Philip G. Epstein, and Howard Koch. The script was based on an unproduced play called Everybody Comes to Rick's, which was written by A husband and wife couple, Murray Burnett and Joan Allison. Not to be confused with June Allison, because I had to like double check. I'm like, wait, June Allison was a playwright? Cinematography by Arthur Edison and music by Max Steiner. The film tells the story of Rick, an American living in French Casablanca during World War II. Rick owns the most famous nightclub in town, and the place attracts people from all walks of life. At his side are his trusted piano player, Sam, and the corrupt police prefect, Renal, who is trying to get on the Nazis' good side. One night, a Czech resistance fighter, Victor Laszlo, arrives at Rick's with his wife, Ilsa. The couple seek passage to America, and conveniently enough, Rick has two indisputable letters of transit that he was holding onto for a now-dead black market swindler friend of his. We soon learn that Ilsa and Rick were lovers in Paris right up until the occupation. When it was time to flee, Ilsa never showed up to the train station. Although deeply in love with Rick, she got news that Laszlo was alive and she had to go to him. Eventually, Rick comes up with a plan to help Ilsa and Victor escape and run away with Ilsa in the process. It is only at the tarmac when he reveals he doesn't intend to leave Casablanca, and he convinces Ilsa that she should go with Laszlo instead. He ensures they get away safely by shooting the Nazi officer who wants to stop the plane. And unexpectedly, Renal decides to let Rick off the hook, marking the start of a beautiful friendship.
Indeed.
Very plotty.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a simple plot, but there's a lot of like little things that happen.
Yeah. The film stars Humphrey Bogart as Rick Blaine, Ingrid Bergman as Ilse Lund, and Paul Heinrich as Victor Laszlo. The film also co-stars Claude Rains as Captain Renault, Dooley Wilson as Sam, Peter Lorre as Ugart, Sidney Greenstreet as Signor Ferrari, and Conrad Veidt as Major Strasser, the Nazi. The film was shot in Burbank, California, baby. Warner Brothers Studios and also the Van Nuys Airport.
That's the Van Nuys Airport?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But I think the Van Nuys Airport is only the scene where the Nazi arrives and he gets off the airplane.
Oh, okay.
Like,
I think
the other part was also
it's
on
a soundstage. Yeah.
Yeah. The ending was on a soundstage. It was rushed into release to coincide with the Allied invasion of North Africa. So it premiered on November 26 in 1942. The invasion happened November 8th through 16th. Can you just imagine that?
No.
Like, can you imagine it's World War II? Okay, we got to release this movie perfectly timed for this battle. Like, that is so weird.
Yeah.
Crazy times. There's like all this scandal behind the writing of this movie. Do you know about it?
Not really, no.
So the Epstein brothers were hired to write it, but they left to work on a Frank Capra movie, and Warner Brothers was like really mad about it. So Koch was brought in, and he only worked on it for like a month because they came back. The Epstein brothers came back. So he apparently none of his pages were used. Although he like published this book saying, actually, I wrote like a significant amount of the movie. But no one really knows. Well, apparently people do know, and apparently none of his pages were used.
Wow.
The writers never worked together. So like the Epstein brothers and Koch, they never were in the same room working together on this movie, which is so weird because how do you have a movie that's so full of like iconic lines that people like worship, but the writing is such a torrid history? It's really interesting. So, like, I feel like the main heart behind this movie was the producer, Hal B. Wallace. He's the one who, like, brought everyone together. And, like, it's not really the work of one person. I feel like if one person could be credited, it is kind of him. He's the one who came up with Rick's final line. And he had Bogart dub it, like, a month after shooting had finished. Here's Looking at You, Kid was not in the screenplay. It was actually written as Here's Good Luck to You, Kid. But apparently Humphrey Bogart decided to change it to Here's Looking at You, Kid because of some, like, he was, like, teaching Ingrid Bergman poker behind the scenes. And there's one hand where, like, I don't know, the king looks at you, the jack looks at you, something like that.
Wow.
So,
oh, the one-eyed jack or something?
I don't know. I don't know. Of course, Play It Again, Sam is never featured in the movie.
Right.
It's just people, that's just in our consciousness for some reason, but it does not appear in the movie.
Even Woody Allen thinks that his whole movie, his a play and film called Play It Again, Sam.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the line.
Yeah.
It's just Play It, Sam, right? It's just, or Play It.
Play It, yeah.
Yeah.
Play It Once More.
Yeah.
Did you know that the movie was released in West Germany in the 50s with the entire plot of the Nazis taken out.
How do you even do that?
Yeah, no sense.
I didn't know
that. Apparently in that version, Victor Laszlo is like a nuclear physicist. And yeah, there was no like correct version until 1975 available in West Germany.
Oh my
God. You couldn't see like Casablanca. I mean, like, crazy.
I get it, but Jesus.
It went through a scandalous colorization process in 1984. And it was
Ted
so
Turner, right?
Bad. Yeah. And apparently it was so bad that the Library of Congress said that these are two different movies. There needs to be two different copyrights.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I'm so glad that that trend is dead now.
Oh, yeah, totally. Apparently, speaking of Truffaut, because we mentioned him earlier, he turned down an offer to remake it in 1974.
Good for him.
I know, right? And yes, Max Steiner did the music, but as time goes by, it was actually part of the story, like all the way in the play version, in the unproduced play version. But Steiner didn't like the song. He wanted to replace it. Didn't end up happening, which is good. Dooley Wilson, who plays Sam, is not actually a pianist. He is a drummer.
No
so
shit.
He is faking it the whole
it's
time.
It's honestly the worst fake piano playing I've ever seen in a movie.
But he has such a great voice.
He does.
It currently sits at number 3 on the AFI list. It is number 1 on their list of romances. It's called 100 Years, 100 Passions. That's the name of the list. Do you want to hear the other movies on the list?
Yeah, let's hear it.
I just wrote down the most ridiculous to me. This is not in any order, okay?
This is 100 Years, 100 Passions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Lady and the Tramp. Dirty Dancing. Grease. Because what a great love story
Jesus.
That is. Witness with Harrison what? Ford. The movie.
I mean, again, it's a good movie, but not for that.
Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Manhattan.
Can I just say right now, the AFI's list is really dumb.
Yeah. My Fair Lady.
Is also are all high really on the toxic list.
High
stories.
On the list is My Fair Lady.
Jesus.
Yeah, and it won the Academy Award for Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Screenplay.
So Curtiz, he's Hungarian. He made 64 movies in Europe before Warner Brothers brought him over to Hollywood.
I looked it up. He has 178 directing credits.
It's insane. He's one of those just like workman directors that just came in and just like took everything and just did it. And did everything reasonably well. And has a handful of classics under his belt, including this. And then also the Errol Flynn, The Adventures of Robin Hood. Yeah.
And Mildred Pierce. But we'll
Mildred
talk
Pierce,
about
yeah.
him in a bit.
Yeah.
Because I really do want to talk about him.
I don't.
But before we do that, give me your initial thoughts.
I first saw this I think it was like eighth or ninth grade or something. I was young and just discovering like classic movies. And I remember I mentioned this when we did the Citizen Kane episode, but my family was going up to Tahoe for a vacation and we stopped at a Rasputin Music and I bought two movies. I hadn't seen either of them, but I was just like, I'm going to start watching classics. And one of them was this, the other one was Citizen Kane. And I remember at the time, Citizen Kane immediately clicked with me and Casablanca didn't. It wasn't until later in high school, I studied this movie a couple times in film classes. And then in college, I studied this movie a couple times. So I've seen this a good number of times, but before this viewing, I hadn't seen it in probably close to a decade, just because I've seen it so many times. And I was kind of sick of it. Like, okay, I get it. Casablanca, yes, I understand. Yeah, look, it's a good film. I've never felt like a huge affinity for this movie, even though it kind of is like the ultimate dreamland, like Hollywood movie. Like it's kind of like the dream factory of Hollywood, like at its height. And just in terms of like the war is happening and it's an exotic locale and it's like, just the whole nature of it, it feels so like golden age of Hollywood, which is a cool thing. And of course, Ingrid Bergman and Humphrey Bogart, these two massive stars. But I don't have this huge affinity for it. If anything, I like admire the movie more than I love it, because I think it's almost like too clean to really love. It's such a clean, efficient movie. Like there's not, the script is perfect. And again, I think one of the reasons that so many teachers have had us study this film is because the script is just so tight and wastes no time. And it's a very workmanlike script. Not to say that it's without joy, but again, it's a perfectly good movie, but I'm never like, oh, I want to watch Casablanca right now.
Yeah.
I love the fact that it's like an hour and 45 minutes. But yeah, it just doesn't quite like get me excited about film. Again, it's the kind of thing where if it's on Turner Classic Movies, like, yeah, I'll leave it on or something. But like, it's so my feelings are so conflicting because I think it's a really good movie. Like, it's really exceptional. Like, there's nothing I can really get in there and, like, pick apart in terms of, like, that doesn't work, that doesn't work. Like, it's all working really, really well. It's like a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't get me excited. This isn't the kind of movie that I get passionate about, again, because I think it's just too on the tracks for me.
Too ingrained. I feel like if it wasn't so revered, well, we would maybe like it more.
Okay, I mean, it's true that, like, if I had never seen this movie before and I just, like, it popped on, like, oh, let's watch this movie. Like, I'd probably be like, whoa, shit.
Yeah.
But I love The Wizard of Oz. I think The Wizard of Oz is, like, a masterpiece. Yeah. And I love, you know, a lot of, like, Godfather. You know, like, these movies that are such a part of the fabric of culture that I love. Like, I'm really passionate about.
Yeah.
But Casablanca just doesn't quite do it for me. But I still think it's, like, it's great. Like, it's great. And just, what are your thoughts?
I don't know when the first time I saw this was. It was in, like, my grandpa's rotation of movies. So I feel like I've been seeing it all my life. But the first time I sat down to watch it, I truly can't recall. Probably high school. Maybe it was a little before that. I remember I borrowed his VHS because all he had was VHSs. And I'm like, it's time I see this. And I watched it on VHS the first time, like, all the way through. Yeah, I don't know. Like, first of all, I've never seen it on the big screen. And I feel like that would be a really fun experience. Like, I was at the New Bev for something, like, months ago. And they played, because they play, like, themed trailers, right? And it was, like, around Oscar season. And they played this short film that won the Oscar, whatever year it was made, that was just, like, a short, compact, like, you know, like, when you're watching a TV show and there's one episode that's about all, like, the episodes before, it shows, like, clips from all the episodes before. Mm-hmm. It was that before movies. Like, it showed, like, everything. And it was just, like, compact and, like, the play it again, Sam. Not play it again, but the scene where Ingrid Bergman tells him, like, play it, Sam, like, came on. And I'm like, wow. Like, I was just staring up. I'm like, this is great. So I kind of want to see it on the big screen. But I feel a very similar way to you. I love that this movie, like, serves as a symbol of classic Hollywood. I think we could have it way, way worse. It's a really good representative of, A, the studio system, like, in terms of, like, the way it turned out. A, the studio system. B, like, 40s American movies, kind of film noir-y. I mean, it's not really noir, but, like,
has the look of a noir.
Yeah. And C, just, like, Hollywood romance. Like, those three things, it's such a good representative for them. And I like it. I really do like sitting down and watching it. Obviously, I'm not saying it's the best in any of these categories, but there's something so sentimental about it. Like I said, like, when I was in the New Bev and it was playing, I'm like, wow. Like, really, I started tearing up. I don't know. It's an enigma to me. It really is. And this time around, I realized something that never really clicked with me before. Again, I haven't seen it in a really long time, but I didn't realize that this was released while France was still occupied by the Nazis, which is crazy. I mean, I talk all the time about how I feel like COVID movies are too soon, like that we're making them and releasing them too soon. But, like, wow, I feel like I knew that fact about France, but in never, like, the profoundness of it never hit me until this time around. And it made that scene with the, like, dueling anthems really powerful. And I don't know, can you just imagine that though?
Yeah, I it's hard to imagine anything like that today, because there's no, all these films made during the war about the war, I can only imagine, were so powerful in their day, and we don't really have anything to compare.
Well, there's COVID, that's what I'm saying. But I right. Any movie I've seen, or, like, I see it on a TV show, it pops up, like,
that's a different thing.
It bothers me.
Yeah.
It really bothers me. It doesn't even make me feel anything,
right,
except distaste. But yeah, I think there's a magic here that's, like, kind of hard to describe.
It's just that ultimate Hollywood magic, really.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about this movie? This is, like, such a stacked cast. I mean, you mentioned all of them, but it's, like, the who's who of Hollywood character actors of the 40s. So you have Peter Lorre, you have Claude Rains, you have Conrad Veidt, you have Sydney Greenstreet. Like, just an insane cast. Even though some of them only are in it for a few minutes, like Peter Lorre.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I can only imagine. You know what I don't know, actually? I don't know how big this was when it came out. Like, was it this instant big hit?
Huge box office success. Like, it did well. Nothing crazy. And then like throughout the years, it kind of grew. I mean, here's the thing. It like swept the Oscars. So that's always good. Box office wise, it did good. Not like insanely good. And then it just kept kind of gaining in popularity. So in 1957, there was this tradition started at Harvard. There's this movie theater in Cambridge. And for some reason, for whatever reason, they decided to play like old movies in 1957, the week of finals. So they played Casablanca and it was like really successful. So they've been doing it ever since in this one movie theater in Cambridge. It's called, oh, I didn't write it down. I'm sorry. But they play it, they play Casablanca every year during finals week. And then other schools started doing it. And apparently that really helped with like the longevity of, I don't know, popularity for this movie.
You know, honestly, I attribute the success of this movie to, it's not so much that it was this groundbreaking film at the time that like changed film grammar where all these filmmakers saw it and went, right, like, holy shit, and yeah, tried to do that.
Yeah.
It's more just like, in the rearview mirror, this is like a great example of just like the Hollywood studio film.
That's what I'm
like,
saying. At the height, exactly. It's such a good, yeah.
I think that's why it kind of prevailed is because it just kind of has like all the pieces and it's not so much that it's this cutting edge movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's
like
not.
Citizen Kane, because Citizen Kane was groundbreaking. Yes. And something new.
Another thing about this movie is that so much of the cast are actual European refugees from the time that actually just escaped. And I think that that just added such amazing stakes to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's incredible. And can I be the first to say, can we just get this out of the way? This movie is so Indiana Jones.
Yeah, like the first one, Raiders of the Lost Ark specifically.
Yes.
Because they're in Morocco in the first.
Yes, but I'm talking
movie.
About like Adventureland at Disneyland, Indiana Jones.
I guess so. There's not enough vines for me. Because we just had to mention Disneyland.
That was my plug. Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about
Speaking on that, I was in 2006, I went on a family vacation to Puerto Vallarta in Mexico. And as we landed, we flew there and then we rented a car and we're driving to the condo we were staying in. And we passed this restaurant on the side of the road called, I think it was just called Casablanca. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was called Rick's, but it was clearly a restaurant that was themed after the movie. And cool. I saw it and my eyes went wide.
Cool.
And I think 2006, that was my first year of college. And I was just studying it again, like in college. And so it was all amped up. And I like forced my parents. I was like, you're in Mexico and we're eating like local places. But I was like, guys, can we please go to the Casablanca restaurant? And I forced them to go. And finally, like the last night of our trip, like, okay, Greg, we'll go. And I went, and of course, it was like a pretty, I think it's gone now. I remember looking a couple years ago, and I think it's since closed, but it was this huge Rick's Cafe kind of like replica in Puerto Vallarta in Mexico.
I'm gonna look it up.
It was very touristy.
Bogart's.
Yeah, that's what it was called. It was just called Bogart's. Is it still open?
That was in 2018. Bogart's S Restaurant.
Did it survive the pandemic?
God, I don't know. It's really sus. Like when a webpage isn't like coming up,
right,
like Bogart's, you know, and it's like,
yeah,
restaurant Bogart's, Facebook.
It was very touristy.
It looked cool.
But it was very elaborate and it was so cool. The ambiance inside was really cool.
How random.
Yeah. But I was just like thrilled to be there.
I wish. I wish.
We do have Bogey's Liquor in LA.
Let's talk about Curtiz, because I think that this might just be the first movie we've done on the list where the director is not like important or distinctive or recognizable. Not that he's not important. I just mean that like he's not, like not an auteur. Yes.
I mean, I would on the Sight and Sound list
that we've done so far.
Actually, you might be
right because I was actually thinking it through.
Well, some of the personal, like Xanadu, Robert.
Well,
Greenwald.
No, I'm saying on the list.
Right on the list, you might be right because yeah, it's like people like the Archers and Kurosawa and Ozu and Fassbender. Yeah, I think you
which
might
is
be
so
right.
Fascinating. Andrew Saris, who was the number one advocate for the auteur theory, said that this is the most decisive exception to the auteur theory.
Casablanca.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. And apparently Wallace originally wanted William Wyler to...
I'm sure he would have done a good job. Yeah. He's also a great like workman director.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, he was Hungarian. He started working in the industry in 1912. That's
crazy.
Why he has so many credits. But yeah, Mildred Pierce and The Adventures of Robin Hood, those are really the only movies that like it seem are like really famous of his.
Yeah, I mean, he also did Yankee Doodle Dandy, which is huge. And he did White Christmas.
He did White Christmas?
And he did Angels with Dirty Faces.
Wait, he did White Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that changes things.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he has a string of classics, yeah.
He has a string of classics, yeah, but
I know what you're saying.
Strange to me that it's like this is the American movie and it's like a director who's not really like.
Is it the American movie though?
I mean, that's what Roger Ebert said.
About Casablanca?
Do you want me to read what he said?
Yeah, I'm curious.
Casablanca is the movie. There are greater movies, more profound movies, movies of greater artistic vision or artistic originality or political significance. There are other titles we would put above it on our lists of the best movies of all time. But when it comes right down to the movies we treasure the most, when we are, let us imagine, confiding the secrets of our hearts to someone we think we may be able to trust, the conversation sooner or later comes around to the same seven words. I really love Casablanca. I do too.
Yeah, I think he's kind of touching on what I was saying, or what I said was touching on what he said, but just in terms of like, as far as just like a golden age, a Hollywood studio golden age studio product, movie goes, yes. Like this is the height of that.
Yeah.
But that it's not this like exceptional film. It's just right. Like very, very well done and very memorable. You know, one thing I think really contributes to this film's success too is all the, there's really so many popular lines in this movie.
Yeah.
So many. Like I almost forgot. And then you're watching the movie every 5 minutes is like a really famous line.
Yeah.
It's like so many came from this movie. And I almost, in a weird way, that's almost a slight problem I have with the movie is that the movie defines its characters with catchphrases. Like, Rick is the guy who doesn't stick his neck out for anybody. Yeah. That's him. And because he says it several times, that's just, and I kind of, slightly weird problem with that.
Yeah.
But again, as like this studio film from the early 40s, I mean, like, it's great for that, but like, that's not, you don't define a character by just repeating a catchphrase over
round
and over.
Round up the usual suspect.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I think what gives this movie another edge, especially if you take into consideration like the time it was released in the US, is just like this ambiguous morality of the characters, like all of them. I feel like that was pretty like cool for a American movie.
Yeah, but again, you have to remember that Bogart comes from noir. It's funny because Bogart came up and he was like the heavy, which was the villain in a lot of stuff and a lot of noirs. Mm-hmm. And he somehow made this transition to leading man, which is so weird because he looks like a thug.
Totally.
But yeah, he made this transition. And so I think part of that noir sort of background is still with it. And again, noirs have been doing it for a while, this sort of like gray area. I think, I could be wrong, but I think the Maltese Falcon came before this.
41.
Okay, yeah, so it was a year before. But yeah, there's a lot of that in 40s cinema is the cinema of grays.
Right. But like this is like made during World War II about World War II.
No, that part is like fascinating.
Yeah. And like, here's the thing. Rick's morality is like always teased. Like he lets the band play the French anthem. They talk about him in Ethiopia and Spain. Like they say it, they tease it throughout. And of course, everyone knows how it ends. If you're a human on Earth, you know how this movie ends. So I wonder what it was like watching it when it was released. Are you actually surprised at the end that he lets her go, or are you not?
Yeah, probably. I think they probably
were. You would
be
surprised?
I think so.
I
love the myth of Rick, too.
Yeah.
Like, he's built up before you meet him. Oh, he doesn't drink with other people. Yeah. And of course, you know once they say that it's meant to be broken.
Of course. But, of course. Also, how did he afford to open a bar?
I don't know. I don't know. He would be George Clooney if it was made today or 10 years ago. Be George Clooney.
Yes. Oh, my God.
But George Clooney's not quite rugged enough. But still, he has that. Ilsa would be...
Are we talking 10 years ago?
Let's talk now. George Clooney could still play this role.
Ilsa now is kind of hard.
Yeah, this kind of hard.
Who are Ilsas? Who are Ingrid Bergman's? These are big questions.
Yeah, I don't know.
Isabelle Huppert. Hey, I would see that movie.
I would see it. Yeah, it's really kind of like, it's when it comes down to it, Casablanca is just a romantic potboiler.
Yes.
What it is.
But I love the ending so much. I love the what ending he makes tells it. Her. I love Like, I'm obsessed with the fact that he tells her you'll regret it if you stay.
Yeah.
Should we listen to that clip?
Yeah, sure.
And the names are Mr. and Mrs. Victor Laszlo.
But why my name, Richard?
Because you're getting on that plane.
I don't understand. What about you?
I'm staying here with him till the plane gets safely away.
No, Richard, no. What has happened to you? Last night
Last night we said a great many things. You said I was to do the thinking for both of us. Well, I've done a lot of it since then. It all adds up to one thing. You're getting on that plane with Victor where you belong.
But, Richard, no one...
Now, you've got to listen to me. You have any idea what you'd have to look forward to if you stayed here? 9 chances out of 10, we'd both wind up at a concentration camp. Isn't that true, Louis?
I'm afraid, Major Strauss, I would insist.
You're saying this only to make me go.
I'm saying it because it's true. Inside of us, we both know you belong with Victor. You're part of his work, the thing that keeps him going. If that plane leaves the ground and you're not with him, you'll regret it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon and for the rest of your life.
But what about us?
We'll always have Paris. We didn't have, we lost it until you came to Casablanca. We got it back last night.
When I said I would never leave you.
And you never will. But I've got a job to do too. Where I'm going, you can't follow. What I've got to do, you can't be any part of. Ilse, I'm no good at being noble, but it doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. Someday you'll understand that. Now, now. He's looking at you, kid.
Because it's just like, oh, I love when he says, like, maybe not tomorrow, maybe not the next day, but you will. And I love what he says about, like, the three little people. And it really is just like, if you just try to put yourself in that time, and then someone made a love story, and it's like, okay, we don't really, like, well, some people wanted love stories, some people wanted to escape the war. But, like, if you're gonna make a love story, and then you incorporate the war, and you incorporate these ideas about, like, oh, actually, your life doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's amazing.
You know what, too? I love it, how much the war plays into the film, and I can only imagine how prescient it was at the time. But it is like a very easy device to drum up this, like, pulling apart two lovers. Like, it's like, the war, perfect.
But they're being pulled apart. But that is why. That's the whole movie.
Yeah.
Because they love each other.
I do have a problem with what he tells her at the end. He says she needs to stay because she belongs with Victor, because she's what keeps him going. So it's more about the guy continuing to do his thing and her playing a role in his life.
Yeah, it's true. But I think that he also knows her and knows that she... Listen, she starts crying when he sings the French... Like, she's looking at him during that scene where he's singing the French national anthem in tears. Like, she loves this man.
Yeah, yeah, she does.
She might not be, like, in love with him, but, like, I think he recognizes that really, like, that strength in her... Where, like, she cares about the world more than she cares about herself. And he knows that she will regret this because, like, maybe... Wait, what does he say to her? Say it again.
He says that she belongs with him because she's what keeps him going.
And he keeps the world going. And right. She cares about the world more than she cares about herself.
Yeah, I guess.
I get it. No, I get what you're saying.
I'd prefer something a little more personal there. You know what I mean? Like, that's the reason.
So, yeah. So, like, he's morally ambiguous, right? Oh, I do have a question, though. Why did he even tell Victor at the end, like, oh, your wife came to see me last night and tried to make it seem like she loved me? Why did he say that?
He knows that there's the secret between them, and he knows that she hasn't told him. And I think he just wants to create, like, a clean slate for her.
That's sweet.
Of, like, he's the one dishing it out. Even though she's lied to him, he's like, is there anything you want to tell me? And she's like, no.
Yeah.
I think that's Rick's way of just being, of like clearing the air.
Yeah.
And being like, here you go. Now the air's clear. Like, just go.
So there's Rick, right? And he's like kind of shady, but not really shady. But the police chief, Renault, is like a piece of shit.
He's my favorite character.
Such a piece of shit. Little romances. Why do you have to ruin my little romances? That Bulgarian girl, that poor couple that everyone is like invested in, which I love.
Yeah.
I love the scene. Well, we'll get into it. But he's horrible. But he's literally selling visas for sex. It's one of his like guys come in and say, oh, there's a problem with a visa. He says, send her in.
Yeah, I know. Here's the thing, though. Claude Rains is so endlessly suave in this role. You don't think so?
He's such a piece of shit. I don't know.
And he just carries himself that way that like James Mason did or like Cary Grant, where he's like so cosmopolitan and like I don't, like transatlantic, like kind of has that whole thing going on where we just, people are not that way today.
Yeah.
And I think because Bogart has his own thing, and that's like a Bogart thing, but Claude Rains has that like classic, like cosmopolitan vibe about him.
Yeah.
I don't know. And he's like, I love the turn with him at the end, you know?
I like the turn at the end.
He's trash. Like he's trash, but I think he's the most interesting character to watch.
He's pretty interesting.
Just because you don't quite know what he's going to do.
Yeah, but I also don't really get why he's so, like, why does he want to kiss the Nazi's ass so much?
I think because he's just in his own survival. He's just it for, you know, whatever, yeah, you know, whatever can, like, better his own stuff.
It's really funny because, like, this cafe, I love it. And we'll talk about the cafe now.
I'm more of a Blue Parrot fan myself.
Shut up.
Just kidding. I like the name of the Blue Parrot,
but it's
more.
Just so funny because, like, I love the scene where, like, the first time we go to the cafe and you kind of hear all these different conversations happening. I love how it's this, like, crossroads of the world. But yet, then you, like, kind of forget that, like, oh, these are, like, people are in survival mode right now.
Yeah.
And yet they're still coming to the cafe and gambling and drinking. And it's, like, part escape, part business center, part, right. Like,
well, see,
I just love it.
That's the whole part of the Hollywood dream maker of this movie, is that in reality, no, not going to be that glamorous. Yeah, yeah. And like, yeah, it's it's such a swanky place too, like,
oh my god,
it would not have been. And yeah, I think that the general air, like in the film, there's all the characters in the background are always kind of worrying or getting like taken away or something or getting shot.
Yeah,
but I still think people are having too good of a time.
Can I tell you, it reminds me of the Billy Wilder movie, Foreign Affair.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because literally when I watched that, I'm like, I should not want to be in post-World War II Berlin right now. But if I could, I would go back and live in this movie because it looks so fun.
Well, the difference with the Foreign Affair, I think, is because she's like a cabaret singer, right? Yeah,
but she lives in a dilapidated house.
Right, exactly. There was a little bit more, Wilder's a little bit more of a realist.
Yeah.
And so it kind of has that edge to it.
Right.
But yeah, I love Rick's too. It's so swanky and glamorous. But yeah, so it feels so like false at the same time.
Yeah. And I love the scene where, like I said, that duel of national anthems, apparently there was like a witness while they were shooting that, or someone has claimed in some book that like all the actors were like sobbing because like a lot of them were actual refugees, which is incredible. That scene is super moving, but then it kind of ruined it for me this time around because I stopped to think. I'm like, wait, colonialism sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in Casablanca.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of ruined it for me a little bit this time around. But it's still a good scene.
It's a good scene. Yeah.
I love Victor. There, I said it. I love Victor Laszlo.
Yeah. I don't know if I love him. I mean, I like how stoic he is. Do you think it's a good performance?
Everyone online is like stiff right. Performance, stiff. I'm like, I think that's just the character.
I think it's the character too, yeah. No, I think he does a good job.
I think he does a really good job. And I like how they acknowledge the fact that he is like a man who's defined by what he does. And yet he still loves her. And yeah, she'll never be his first priority. But he's still so soft with her and she respects him so much. And like, I don't know. I'm kind of fascinated by their relationship.
Yeah.
Do you?
Okay. They probably have not had sex in like years. That's
like,
the vibe I get.
Okay. Can I play a clip from When Harry Met Sally?
I guess. Yeah. Go ahead. You want to set it up?
This is like when Harry and Sally are driving. First of all, they watch Casablanca later in the movie. They're each in their own living rooms and they like,
right.
they're watching it on TV. But this is the first time they meet, like when they're driving to New York City and they're talking about it.
You're wrong.
I'm not wrong.
He
wants her to leave. That's why he puts her on the plane.
I don't think she wants to stay.
Of course she wants to stay. Wouldn't you rather be with Humphrey Bogart than the other guy?
I don't want to spend the rest of my life in Casablanca married to a man who runs a bar. It probably sounds very snobbish to you, but I don't.
You'd rather be in a passionless marriage.
And be the first lady of Czechoslovakia.
Than live with a man you've had the greatest sex of your life with just because he owns a bar and that is all he does.
Yes. And so would any woman in her right mind. Women are very practical, even Ingrid Bergman, which is why she gets on the plane at the end of the movie.
I understand.
What? What?
Nothing.
What?
Forget about it.
What? Forget about what?
It's not important.
Now just tell me.
Obviously, you haven't had great sex yet.
Yeah, so I always think of them when I watch this movie.
Yeah, that's good. But he does so much more than own a bar.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's like a jack of all trades. He kind of like runs the, you know, he like holds the letters of transit and stuff. Yeah. Like he's a powerful guy.
People, and he does have a passionate side, and he does have a patriotic side for sure.
You know who he reminds me of? He reminds me of Robert De Niro in Casino. Yeah. Especially in terms of like kind of the gray area. Like when you first see him, you're like, oh, this guy's slimy. But then as you get to know him, you're like, oh, no, he's actually a pretty good guy. And he like means well. But he's surrounded by all these kind of like bad people. Even the way he carries himself, too.
Do you think she shouldn't have gotten on the plane?
I think she should have gotten on the plane because I'm all for any love story ending. Like,
I was just going to say that.
Bittersweetly.
I was just going to say that. I think the best romances, are either sad or open-ended.
Yeah, I don't want to see people end up together.
Name a movie where they end up together that you think is like really romantic. I'm like putting you on the spot right
You've
now.
Got mail.
Oh, Harry and Sally for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, Harry and Sally. It's like those Nora Ephron type movies, I think, in general. But
no, think of a good one.
Those are good. You mean like
I want to say one, but it's going to kill it for you because I know you haven't seen it, so I'm not going to say it.
Oh, okay. Are you sure I haven't seen it?
Yes, because I tell you to watch it all the time.
Now I'm curious what it is.
Can't tell you.
Shit. Yeah, I think those the only ones I like where they end up together are the ones that are like, you know, sweet confectionery movies.
Xanadu?
Yeah, sure. Because there's no stakes anyway, right?
Right.
But like any other film, especially love the ending of Annie Hall. I think that's one of my favorite endings to a romance ever.
It's good.
I love it.
I love it. And, again, the last shot.
I don't want them to crash and burn. Like, I don't want someone to die in the end. Like, but I like that just like, oh, we went our separate ways and they're going about their life. I'm going about mine. I don't know. Yeah.
Me too. Anyway, something about this movie is very epic, and I'm trying to like name what it is, and it's kind of hard. I think it's just because we've been told all our lives like this is the movie.
Sure. I think too, it's for all those reasons. It's for the two leads. It's for the exotic locale. It's for the wartime torn apart love story. It's all of those things together. Yeah, the look of the movie, it does have kind of a noir look to it. There's a lot of shadows and stuff. And
I love every time it like the camera whips up or down to like reveal a name or a place, like the name of a place.
Yeah.
Those are really cool. Yeah, there's that cool like shadow shot when he opens his...
Yep, the shadow of Rick against the wall.
Yeah, when he opens his safe.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And then there's
cool.
great shots of Ingrid Bergman just like looking beautiful.
Yeah.
And apparently like she told them, oh, I like my left side more. So there's a lot of shots where she's like turning to her left. Oh. Did you notice? Sight and Sound?
Yeah, let's do Sight and Sound. That's a perfect transition in the Sight and Sound.
There we go. What's your favorite sight? Speaking of sights.
So talking about the tilts.
We got the same one, I think.
It's actually the establishing shot of Casablanca because you start off and it's a matte painting.
Yes.
You see a guy in a tower and it's a matte painting.
Yeah.
And then it tilts down into live action, but it's like a very seamless.
Yes.
And because it's just a technically good movie. And I think that's such a piece of like effortless filmmaking of like, it's not showy like Citizen Kane, but it's just this very like, now we're in live action. Now we're in the streets of Morocco.
Yeah.
What about you?
My favorite sight is the first time we see the cafe where it tilts down from the sign that says Rick's. It tilts down and then we go inside. Mm-hmm. It's so cool.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool.
Yeah. The only thing they could have done is do a Goodfellas tracking shot like at the Copacabana.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this is like the proto that shot.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Course.
What's your favorite sound?
My favorite sound is when Rick and Elsa have just discovered each other again in Casablanca, and he's drinking alone with Sam, and she comes back that night, and he's pretty drunk.
Yeah.
And he says this to her.
I can understand how you feel.
You understand how I feel. How long was it we had, honey?
I didn't count the days.
Well, I did. Every one of them. Mostly I remember the last one. The wow finish, a guy standing on a station platform in the rain with a comical look in his face because his insides had been kicked out.
Yeah, it's just...
So emo.
It's very emo. But
I love the one line she says. I don't remember exactly when she does, but she says something. It's during that scene because he's being like a big asshole to her. And she's like, wow, one girl breaks your heart and you blame the world. Like, I love that.
Yeah, It's good. He's being a major bitch in that scene.
He's such a bitch.
What's your favorite sound?
My favorite sound is when they are in Paris and the occupation has started and she's like, they're like really sad about their fate, whatever, and they're like hugging and she says this.
Kiss me. Kiss me as if it were the last time.
Yeah, I mean, it's so iconic.
It's so good. Iconic. I just love her. I love her accent. I'm just here for it.
I do love the line, even though it's so basic. It seems like something someone would actually say of like, I love you so much and I hate this war so much.
Yes, I love that line.
Right before that, yeah.
Definitely.
Well, should we do Pauline Kael?
Yes. I know she doesn't like this movie that much.
Okay, here's what she had to say. Pauline Kael says, Ingrid Bergman became a popular favorite when Humphrey Bogart, as Rick, the most famous saloon keeper in screen history, treated her like a whore. Although their romance was certified by a collection of Academy Awards, they didn't press their luck and never appeared together again. In the role of the cynic redeemed by love, Bogart became the great adventurer lover of the screen during the war years. In this film, he established the figure of the rebellious hero, the lone wolf who hates and defies officialdom. And in the movies, he fulfilled a universal fantasy. He got away with it. Questioned about his purpose and motives, he informs the police, I came to Casablanca for the waters. Waters? What waters? We're in the desert. I was misinformed. It's far from a great film, but it has a special, appealingly schlocky romanticism. You're never really pressed to take its melodramatic twists and turns seriously.
Wow.
It's a little harsh, but I think she kind of puts her finger on how I feel about this movie, too. Although
The not taking it seriously?
Yeah, kind of. Like, yeah. It's literally just a piece of Hollywood movie making. Yeah. That's literally it. It doesn't feel like it was born from a great artist or like this great need to tell this specific story as it so much was like, what's going on right now? The war. Let's write a romance. And it's a very tight script. This sounds so harsh, but I'm just like trying best to like sum this up in like a few words. I think it's one of the most unremarkable great movies there is. Yeah. Where like, I do think it's great. I like it more than Pauline. It is a great film. It's really well constructed. But compared to other great films, especially ones on the Sight and Sound list, it's not that special besides being ingrained in our public consciousness.
Right.
And I do think that there could be a Sight and Sound list where this is not on the list anymore.
It's very interesting. We'll have to wait and see. Actually, we don't have long now before the new list comes out,
it should be
any
time,
right?
Ooh. Yeah.
I'm very curious. I think it will be on it. My bet is it will be on it.
I think it will be, yeah.
Like you said, I think there is something to say about the fact that it's like, everyone knows Casablanca. Everyone. Even people who don't watch movies.
Right.
Do they know what it's about? No, but everyone knows Here's Looking at You, Kid.
Exactly, yeah.
It is like The Wizard of Oz.
And Gone with the Wind, yeah.
Wait, Wizard of Oz is not on the list.
It's not, no.
That blows my mind. That blows my mind.
I think that's like a pretty visionary movie. Yeah. I think that's like special and yeah. I mean, I feel weird calling Casablanca like not special. It's just very, very, very good.
It is, yeah, it is.
I don't know. Would you say it's special?
I don't know. I feel like I can't. I'm like really biased because of just like the fact that I'm a human being on Earth that has like likes movies.
It's in the
and
movies,
this is like the like I don't know. It's just I would like to see myself in a world where this movie wasn't so popular. And yes, like you said, just discover it on TV one day and see how you feel.
I know
that's fascinating.
Yeah, I would love to see it in that context, which we'll never
I don't
be
think
able
that
to do.
Ever. I don't think, and I've said this before, I don't think calling any movie the best movie ever helps it in any way possible.
No.
It only makes things worse for the movie. I truly think that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So let's do Letterboxd.
Let's do it. Okay. Here's a 4-star review. 1 hour and 42 minutes I sat through this and nobody said play it again, Sam. Fuck this shit.
Wait, what is the Woody Allen? It's called Play It Again, Sam.
It
right?
is, yeah.
Okay.
It was a play that then was turned into a movie that he didn't direct, but he's in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought he directed it.
No.
That's so funny.
But he wrote it.
0.5 star. I watched an adult man wonder if he should help the guy fighting against the Nazi. I could not stand to watch him. It pissed me off.
Very insightful. Here's a 4-star review. They say, I think the main reason why Casablanca has retained its iconic status over the years is due to its dynamic script, crafting a fine balance of romance, suspense, and humor, which provides it with a wide-ranging appeal. I'm fairly confident that anyone could find something to appreciate here, whether it's the World War II backdrop, especially evocative as the conflict was at its midpoint during filming, the morally enigmatic characters, the moody black and white visuals, or the lively dialogue that has become ingrained in cinematic lexicon. The entire film is neatly straightforward, in a positive sense, with little time wasted on unnecessary details, since everything is geared towards propelling the plot or developing the characters' relationships. There are some flaws to be found, chiefly Paul Heinrich's stiff-as-a-board turn that hinders some of the drama and the slightly goofy Nazi portrayal that undercuts tension. However, the leads deserve all the praise they have received. The anguished pathos of Humphrey Bogart, the enchanting elegance of Ingrid Bergman, and the quick-witted delivery of Claude Rains mesh together quite exquisitely. So much enjoyment comes from simply watching them play off of each other, and I'm not sure the film would be as memorable without such convincing performances. Really well put.
What a textbook review. Like, yeah. And in the terms that it's just so like eloquent and hits literally every mark. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't get this.
No, I like Paul Heinrich. Yeah, I think he's
love
good.
Paul Heinrich. I think that's the character, and I think he does a great job. He gives me kind of Captain Von Trapp vibes,
sure,
a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love him in Now Voyager.
Oh, yeah. Voyager? Yes, with Betty Davis. Yes,
he's so good in it.
Yeah, I forgot really he was like in that him. Until just now.
Half a star, more like Casa Blanca.
Jesus. Someone gave it half a star. Quite possibly one of the worst movies ever made. A movie filled to the brim with cliches and a story that does nothing but promote itself as propaganda. Humphrey Bogart is a phenomenal actor. His class and skill is above pointless drivel like Casablanca. The Maltese Falcon was 1,000 times better.
Hilarious.
Don't agree with that.
I do not at all. Half a star. This one's good. The only redeeming quality for this goddamn train wreck of a film was the fact that it had a parrot sitting outside the building known as Blue Parrot, at which point I could only assess that this particular parrot must be of significant importance to the plot. After all, he did look rather professional and sophisticated, leading me to ask the question, does that parrot own the bar? To which the film never gives an answer. Complete waste of time. I want 2 hours of my life back. Blue Parrot is a cool name.
It's a very cool name. Sounds like a tiki drink.
See, that's what I'm saying. This is Adventureland in Disneyland.
Sure.
It had to be said.
Aladdin's Oasis. You remember
Ooh,
that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that restaurant.
That was cool. But was now cool. They have something. Have you been since they opened the...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's a new place to get Dole Whip, and it's like...
It's also like dumplings.
Very cool, yeah.
It's like buns and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I remember when I was a kid, they had that Aladdin's Oasis show.
Yeah.
I think it's been gone like 20, 25 years at this Shut point.
Up. No, I've seen it. I'm 25.
Maybe 20 years it's been gone?
I remember it pretty well. I must have been at least 10 to retain the memory.
Because it was dinner and a show, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I remember sitting there, and their whole thing was they had these chocolate genie lamps that had mousse inside. You remember that?
No.
All I remember is when I was a kid, I was a super picky eater. And I ordered chicken nuggets, and I just like wasn't really eating them. And this waiter came by, and he pointed. He's like, "Eat your chicken nuggets." I like very vividly remember him telling me to eat.
So funny.
But yeah, it's
he could be listening to this episode right now. For
he
all
could
we know.
Be the world's biggest Casablanca fan.
But yeah, I like this movie. I think
it's a great movie. A great it really movie. Is.
It
yeah.
It really is.
Maybe sounds like we're kind of hard on it, but no, I mean, no, it's a great film. I don't necessarily think it's one of the 100 greatest films ever made, but it's a great movie.
I think it deserves to be on the list.
It's fair.
Just for everything, it's like, it's history. It's number 3 on the AFI list.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane. In no world is this the 3rd greatest movie, even if you're just counting American movies still.
Well,
no.
This is also a list where... Wait, what's number 1? What's number 1?
It's like Citizen
Is it
Kane.
Raging Bull?
You know, I think it's like Citizen Kane, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Citizen Kane. But I thought Raging Bull was very high up there. Okay. The AFI Top 10. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I think we've read this, but whatever. It's still fun. Citizen Kane, The Godfather, Casablanca. Raging Bull's number 4. That's high.
It's a great movie.
Singing in the Rain, Gone with the Wind, Lawrence of Arabia, Schindler's List, Vertigo, and The Wizard of Oz. That's top 10.
Yeah.
Those are pretty big, like,
yeah, they're like movies. They're all very obvious. They're like movies they're not going to get
super obvious.
Any heat over any of those. Yeah. But, yeah.
Except Gone with the Wind, which is...
I don't think that should be nowhere near a top 100 list.
Yeah.
Anyway, what are we doing next week? We're doing Persona. So this is going to be our second Bergman that we've covered so far. We did do Seventh Seal. And actually, in a couple weeks, we're doing another one. Just the way it happens from this ping pong action ping of doing pong. One from the top of the list and the bottom of the list is Fanny and Alexander will be coming up soon, too.
You know what's even more wild? I think that the reason this is happening is because we decided to skip ping pong one week and went to Nashville. So that, for whatever reason, has caused this cosmic alliance of Bergman movies, even though we're still doing ping pong.
I think that might still happen, though, because Nashville was like in the 70s.
You're right.
Like, we wouldn't have gotten to it yet.
You're right.
Yeah. So we're going to have a couple Bergmans. Next week we're doing Persona, which is one of the great enigmatic expressions in all of cinema, really.
When we said we were going to do this podcast, I told Greg, I'm like, oh my God, I'm really scared for Persona.
I'm scared too. So how do you talk about Persona?
How do you talk about Persona?
Yeah, it's something that you just kind of experience. But come back next week, because to see us fumble around with our words, trying to make some kind of sense of our feelings towards Persona,
yeah,
and trying to, like, you know, connect the dots.
I'm so excited.
So yeah, that's what we're doing next week. So yeah, I hope everybody has a great week. Until then, I'm Greg.
Here's looking at you, Greg.
There you go. Have a great week, everybody.
Wait, I didn't say my name.
Oh, say your name.
No. Let's just do until then. Here's looking at you, Greg. You say here's looking at you, Jack.
Okay. Until then.
Here's looking at you, Greg.
Here's looking at you, Jack. Have a great week.
Bye.
Bye.
A kiss is just a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh.
This has been an official podcast of the Arroyo Film Club. Seen and Heard is Jacqueline Pistagian and Greg Kleinschmidt. Theme music by Andrew Cox. You can find us at seenandheardpod.com.
And when two lovers woo, they still say I love you. On that you can rely. No matter what the future brings.